Hey, thank you everybody for tuning in this weekend to Nevada Backcountry. We've got a repeat special guest on, Randy Newberg, on your own adventure and hunt talk. Randy, holy smokes, good to have you back on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I was worried last time I might have ruined your entire brand in 20 minutes, so I was worried maybe I wasn't going to get invited back.
Nah, with Dave and I involved, that's impossible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we ruin things all on our own. It doesn't take us long.
No, it's always fun to be back. You know, having went to college in Reno and lived in northern Nevada for 6 years, I love coming back there, and I keep pretty well in tune to what's going on out there in Nevada, because coming back and hunting in Nevada, the rare time I get to do it, is a special time for me.
You did not hunt Nevada last year, correct?
Nope, didn't. For whatever reason, I don't know why, they just decided that I wasn't worthy of a sheep tag again for the 24th year.
Yeah, you and about 18,000 other people.
Yeah, I'm on that train too. I got 24 points.
How many points you have for sheep, Randy?
I think it's 24 this year.
Oh, both of you guys. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we first had you on the show last year, you were just about to head to, I believe it was Alaska for a bear hunt. Yeah, a bear hunt, wasn't it?
Yeah, spring bear up in southeast Alaska. I went up there, and every once in a while, you run into one of those animals that wants to be a video star.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
This guy was just like walking around like in a Far Side cartoon, like, hey, look at me, look at me. And so, yeah, it was a wonderful hunt. The weather was beautiful. It only rained one of the 5 days, which is
rare in Alaska.
So.
That was a heck of a nice bear. What, it just hung around long enough, decided it wanted to get shot?
Yeah, it's one of those things where we've never in our 16 years of doing this had a bear stay there at 200 yards for 45 minutes.
Whoa.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. The wind was perfect, and he's feeding in this tall grass, and finally he just presented the shot that you just can't turn it down. And so,
no.
Yeah.
What caliber?
Really good. I should have reported back to you guys after I got back. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. Would you, so you shot that with the Super Light, correct?
Yeah, the new Howa Super Light. That was in a 308, which I get a lot of ridicule about hunting so much with the 308, but I have a whole wall full of bull elk that didn't get the memo that a 308 isn't a good elk cartridge.
Yeah.
Randy, that's my gun too.
Is it?
Yeah. Not that I've ever hunted with a rifle.
Dave's an archery purist.
That's what I have. I have a 308. It's a Howa 308. And I don't know. I just love that thing.
Yeah. Well, now they have the new, what's called the Super Light. It's 4 pounds, 7 ounces. And a lot of people, when they see it, they're like, let me hold that. And I let them hold it. And they're like, I'm not sure about this thing. And then when they see it perform, they're like, where do I get one of those?
Oh, yeah. It feels like a toy. You ever have that experience where you go to pick up a milk jug you think is full off the counter?
Yeah.
And it's empty.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, that's exactly how picking up this rifle is.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Like pretty much all of my equipment, that Howa setup that I have is way more capable than I am. So I know I'm the weak link.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree with you.
Hey, so I talked to Andy McCormick yesterday. I was supposed to light your fire a little bit. Ron Spomer says you're the weak link too.
Ron is a great friend of mine, but he's become a pretty big fan of that Howa Super Light. So Andy's always pitching that Ron and I need to go on some sort of YouTube video or podcast together and debate the virtues of a 308, because I've yet to convince Ron in the 15 years I've known him that the 308 is a worthwhile cartridge. But Ron has been there, done that, and I think he's shot just about every cartridge on the planet. So he carries a little more weight than I do when it comes to arguing cartridges.
Well, he's pretty high on the hog about the 6.5 Creedmoor Super Light. Andy said I need to make sure I get that in there and see if we couldn't get you going on a Ron Spomer rant.
Yeah, no matter what Ron tells me, he and I met this spring, and I'm like, Ron, you still haven't convinced me I'm still shooting that 308. And he just laughs.
Yeah. Now, you run it suppressed too, don't you?
I do. One of the things about being older is your hearing starts going away. And I grew up in the age, you know, where, I'll work in the sawmill. I don't need hearing protection. I'll run chainsaws. I don't need hearing protection. My left ear, because I'm right-handed, my left ear is really damaged from shooting. And I always had this idea that, guys who hunt with suppressors, I'm not sure about that. Until I started doing it a couple of years ago. And now I'm like this missionary person, like, hunt with that suppressor. If it's
preaching
legal.
The gospel.
Your ears will never regret it. You will thank yourself. And I've been running suppressors on those super lights, and it balances the rifle grade. It takes away, you know, what modest recoil you do get in the short action cartridges of the 308 or 7mm08. It makes it even better. And your ear doesn't ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What suppressor are you running?
Nosler makes these titanium aluminum alloy mix. So it's called an ALTI 30 by Nosler is the one that I have on mine. I know, again, I'm going to sound like I'm a missionary here, but I am so impressed with how tight the groups are, how quiet it is, all the things you read about of why people might want to consider hunting with a suppressed rifle. It's amplified when you go and do it. I mean, you all these benefits are like so obvious. And you ask yourself, why did I wait until I was 58 before I started doing this?
Yeah, no kidding. Now, talk to me about the regs, and because you live in Montana. Yep. Montana is like Idaho, isn't it? Where you can own a suppressor without the paperwork that's manufactured in state as long as you don't take it out of state. Is that the way that works?
You know, there's some related rule to that, but since mine was manufactured in Bend, Oregon by
Nosler, right?
By Nosler, that rule doesn't apply to me. And a bunch of people got a hold of me and said, "Hey, you got to make your own suppressor and this and that." I get it, but I'm an accountant by training. no one's going to confuse me being an engineer or a handyman. So I'll go through the paperwork. It's unfortunate that it takes quite a while, but I do know that the turnaround times are getting to be better and better. So
yeah, my dad just went through the process, and supposedly it has been shortened up a little bit. But yeah. Like you, Dave and I did an episode on muzzle loaders, and yeah, the appeal of those kind of build your own flintlock style rifle thing. And then both of us were like, nah, you know what? I know my strengths. I know my weaknesses. I'm not fooling with building things that go boom.
No.
Yeah. Well, I'm absolutely fascinated by people who can build their own stick bows. And to me, I always said, when I grew up someday, I'm going to build my own recurve or longbow, and that's what I'm going to hunt. But at this point in my life, I've realized I better give up on growing up, because that's never going to be a reality for me. As much as I admire it and I aspire to be there someday, I know where my weaknesses are.
Yeah.
Building my own bow is not in the cards for me.
I'd have to agree with you there, Randy, because when I've watched individuals building their own bows, I'm just like, man, that is a serious attention to detail. I don't have that.
No, sure the limbs aren't twisted.
You know, yeah. I'd be like, yeah, that looks all right. Yeah. You know, and yeah, I would scroll so fast. I'm like, yeah, it looks okay.
I'm perfectly content purchasing.
Yes.
My hunting implements.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, hey, guys, I got a question here. I downloaded my Nevada application booklet last week. And you guys get to moose hunt this year if you're one of the lucky people who draw a tag. How about
yes,
that?
Sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, we did, a whole episode on that. But yeah. I was absolutely pleased as punch over the change. So, yeah, we have a moose season now, Randy.
Yeah, we'll find out how many tags we get here at the beginning of May when the quota meetings occur. And I'm not anticipating any more than two.
Well, as a non-resident, I surely don't expect there'll be enough moose tags that there'll be a non-resident tag, and that's understandable. I mean, in a state like Nevada, where you're dealing with such harsh habitat, you know, and it's hard to keep population numbers high, so you need to share that mostly with your residents, and if there is some leftovers, I guess us non-residents will stand in line gladly.
Yeah.
But you have to take care of your residents first. And
yeah.
I don't expect that I'm going to be hunting moose in Nevada in my lifetime.
Dave and I talked about it. We think it'll shape up to be kind of like the mountain goat situation. You know, three, maybe four tags for residents, and that'll be about it.
If either one of us ends up with that lucky moose tag, you are more than welcome to come along and be some eyes.
I hope you're fully serious if you say that, because if I find out one of you guys are the lucky recipients, I'm going to be in your camp.
Oh, 100%.
Heck yeah.
I'll try to do something of value.
No, hey, Randy, here's how excited I am about the whole thing. I gave out my email address. I can't remember if I gave out my phone number or not, but when we did the episode, I basically put it out there to everybody that listens. Hey, if you are one of the ones to draw this, call me, email me. I'm good for a pack out. I will go help.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. You know, we hear so much doom and gloom these days about wildlife and hunting opportunity. It's nice when we see some new opportunities established.
Oh, yeah. Amen. Yeah. Let's pause right there, Randy, and take a quick break. Thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring the show. Back in a sec. The show is Nevada Backcountry. The guest is Randy Newberg from On Your Own Adventure. Let's jump back to your season. So you went from that bear hunt last year, and then what else did you put down last year, Randy?
Oh, last year was one of those years where we were luckier than we deserved, and I'll take it because it makes up for all those years where I thought we deserved more than we got.
So I
came back. In the fall, you know, here in Montana, I get an over-the-counter deer and elk tag. So did quite a bit of that. Shot a really old mule deer buck that he's toothless. His antlers weren't much, but that was a fun hunt. I actually, one of my dream hunts was to go and hunt the Yukon. I got that done last year.
Oh, very cool.
Caribou and moose. So that was fun. Then I burned 25 points in Utah for a pronghorn tag. Don't ask me why someone would accumulate 25 points for a pronghorn tag, unless that might be an exercise in psychology. So I went and did that, shot a nice pronghorn in Utah. I had an Arizona elk tag last year, one of the late rifle tags. And have you ever had a tag where you talk to a lot of people who've had it before and they say, whatever you do, don't do this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I did what they said, don't do this. It bordered one of the reservation boundaries. And everyone's like, look, in the late season, that is a strategy bound to fail because those bulls are never going to leave the reservation. And I'm like, yeah, I don't believe it.
They don't know what they're talking about.
So 7 days of sitting there staring at the same bulls on the wrong side of the fence and not a single one of them crossed. That tag is still in my desk drawer.
Oh, ouch. Ouch.
Dang it.
Don't ask me why I felt somehow I was going to be any different than all the people I talked to, but.
You're Randy Newberg. You're the Randy Newberg. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mostly it's because I'm bullheaded and not that smart. You know, when you're below average, life comes with some tough lessons.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just hoping that one of those elk was just like your bear and wanted to be a video star.
You know, that's what I was hoping for. But somehow they must have digital map loaded in their brain or something, because it's just this old broken down fence. It's like, wow, they could step over that in a heartbeat. But they didn't. So something tells me that the ones that don't know where that fence line is, that got taken out of the gene pool. It was fun though to go and do that. And then I had a coos deer tag in Arizona. I went down and shot a funky old buck there, goofy looking thing. And then I mostly spent the rest of the season with friends and others, helping them on their hunts, and had a blast.
All of your stuff with the 308.
Yep. Well, I take that back. The deer was with a 7mm.08.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I have multiple super lights that have a super light. I have two 308s and one 7mm.08. So,
have you gotten your hands on the 243 yet?
I have not.
Yeah, no, that's the one I keep. In fact, I got to go beat Andy up on this, but I want to get my hands on one of those.
Yeah. And did he show you the one now where they're making it even lighter by bringing the barrel? It's meant to be suppressed.
Yeah. He, so what, like 16 inch barrel or something? It's like 4.3 pounds.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
16 and a quarter, 16 and a half, something like that. And when you put a suppressor on it, then, you know, you're getting out there to the normal 22 inch barrel. I don't have one of those yet, but I've been told that one will be coming my way. So I better remind him of that.
That one, I was talking to him about for like my kids, man, that in a 243 with a can on it, no recoil. Holy smokes. That would be a ton of fun.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to be in Nevada elk hunting this year. You know, I'm sure my, whatever it is, 7 or 8 points. Is guaranteed.
It's going to do it.
full sarcasm in force there.
You and how many people put in for that out of state elk tag, Dave? Or the out of state, like 20 plus thousand?
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot put in for that. And yeah, I've got 9 points now. So we'll.
As a resident.
A resident. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. I lucked out, and in 2005, you guys must have felt that I was worthy of a tag, and I drew in 2005. So then I got in the, what do you guys call it, the penalty box for
10 years?
Yeah, so I think I'm back up to 8 points. But, you know, I view Nevada as just kind of like raffle tickets for a non-resident. And that's how it should be.
Yeah.
You know, buy my license, make my donation to the endow, and then they let me buy raffle tickets for the likelihood that maybe I'll draw.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry. Where was your elk tag, Randy?
When I had that elk tag, it was over in 221, 22, and 223.
Oh, that's where I shot my bull.
Yeah, heck of a good unit.
Yeah, that's where I shot my bull in 2006.
Well, maybe it was one of those broken up ones that I passed on in 2005 because I saw some monstrous bulls. But they were all broken and busted, and it's like, you know, it just doesn't seem right shooting a bull that's all broken up, where the next year maybe he'd be intact and somebody could shoot him, and, you know, it'd look a whole lot different. So,
yeah,
but it was fun.
It's a nice area. It's a great area.
Let's see, 2006, 2005, 2006, that was the 5 and 10, wasn't it, Dave?
Correct.
So if you passed, you only had to wait. So if you didn't fill the tag, you had to wait 5 years. They have since changed that to 7 and 7, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yeah, now it's only you wait 7 years.
We'll see how that one plays out in the long term, Randy. I have my suspicions that there are going to be a lot of satellite bulls hitting the dirt.
Yeah.
But
well, that was kind of one of the things is that the success rate was so low because you had a lot of hunters that were like, well, I'm not going to shoot a 340 bull. You know, I'm not going to shoot any of these smaller bulls because there's a lot of people in Nevada shooting 380s plus.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to not fill my tag, and then I only have to wait 5 years to put back in, so then I'll have a better chance to get my, you know, 380 plus bull later.
Yeah.
So it was causing kind of a lot of bulls.
A lot of bulls left.
Yeah,
out there.
And now there's a lot of bikes and a lot of satellite bulls running around.
Yeah, we'll see. Like I said, that's only been the last couple years.
I would say it's probably been 8-10 years since they made that change. Because I was
in my life that's a couple years, Dave.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
A couple years ago. No,
just
so they changed it.
Ago.
I don't know. Another 10 years or so, we'll see what kind of impact that had. But
yeah,
now it's kind of incentivizing. Hey, take something. If you get the tag, take it.
Yeah, because I've got 6 points for spike elk. I'm looking forward to that because they changed the designation on what a spike is again. So.
Well, you guys have that first come, first serve list.
Oh, yeah.
In 2022, because last year they changed it where it's now by residency. So
correct.
Not us non-residents, we can only pick up non-resident tags. Well, in 2022, I'm sitting home during Thanksgiving, and I'm preparing. I got to go do this fundraiser series of things for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and I happen to have your website up, and an elk tag pops up, boom, I put it in my cart. And I am dancing around the house, and my wife is like, what's up? I'm like, I have a Nevada elk tag in my cart. Yeah, and I'm really fired up. And she's like, well, what are you going to tell the Elk Foundation then? Because the dates you just told me, you're supposed to be doing that stuff for them. Oh man. And you know how you got to buy it within, what, 5 minutes or something?
Yeah. Yep.
I let it expire, and I didn't buy it. And then I went and looked at my draw odds. My draw odds were less than 1% of drawing that tag. I'm like, Randy, you idiot. So I go do this thing for the Elk Foundation, and the day I show up, I'm telling them about it. And they're like, you know, we are the Elk Foundation. We expect people to go elk hunting.
Yeah, that was a free pass.
You could've found someone to do this for you.
Oh, man.
Like, what are you telling me?
Hey, I sat on a premium mule deer buck tag in my shopping cart for Idaho, and I did the same thing, Randy. I hemmed and hawed. I can't remember if it was a conflicting dates or something, but yeah, I sat there and was like, man, I should really do that. Hey, this is a heck of a nice unit. Plenty of 200-inch bucks come out of there. Boy, I should really buy this thing. And you sit there and think about it long enough, and next thing you know, you're empty-handed.
Yeah, but that's a pretty unique program you guys have there. I was surprised that the first few years you let non-residents grab tags that were returned by residents. I'm like, this isn't going to last.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's
overly generous.
Yeah, that program got scrutinized pretty hard after a little while when they started seeing the numbers of non-residents
picking up resident tags. Thanks to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Go check them out on South Virginia Street in Reno. Everything you guys need to get out and explore the public land in Nevada. Hopefully everybody got a refill. The show is Nevada Backcountry, and our special guest today is Randy Newberg. I wanted to talk about your partnership. You got something going with Brownells. I guess your camera crew are going to be shooting the Precision Rifle Series with Howa Barreled Actions this summer.
Yeah, four of our people decided they want to go and shoot this NRL series for the Hunter series, not the Long Range series, where you go with, you build a hunting rifle and you go there and you try to replicate hunting conditions. And they've built their four rifles on, you know, Howa Barreled Actions, which the exclusive on that goes through Brownells online. And so we got four barreled actions, and we've built, I shouldn't say we, they've built four rifles. They're working up their loads. And they went to an event as kind of a practice event a couple weekends ago. And they came back pretty humbled on Monday morning. There wasn't a lot of bragging about anything. Yeah, and I told them, guys, you brag about your shooting after the hunt, not before.
Yeah.
So it's a fun thing, though. They're really excited about it. I've been watching what they've been doing. It's a way to build something way less expensive than if you go and buy a custom rifle. And this NRL Hunter series is to replicate hunting conditions. And yeah, they make people shoot further out there than you ever would in a hunting situation. But the idea of that is if you're doing these 600-700 yard hunts in a timed competition, 600-700 yard shots, when it comes to be a 200 or 300 yard shot and you're out in the field, it's going to be a layup. It's going to be a slam dunk. So that's the whole premise of it. They say already they feel like it's helping them a lot. So it's fun that we can do that off a barreled action from Howa, because then you got the whole inventory or the whole lineup of everything Howa makes, depending on what cartridge you want to shoot.
I have two rifles that were built off Howa Barreled Actions. Stupid accurate, way more accurate than I am right out of the box. But I was going to say, the NRL, Randy, is that similar to like a 3D archery shoot where there's different stations and everything?
Yeah, there's different stations. There's different classes. Like some guys show up with these heavy rifles where you almost need a mule to carry your rifle for you. A middle weight type rifle and then a lighter weight rifle. Then there's like a stock package where you just show up with your hunting rifle and your over-the-counter ammo. And you go from station to station. It's timed. You have X amount of time to acquire the target and then to make your shots. And there's a score that's kept. You get to find out just how you perform compared to everybody else.
Now, what calibers did they pick?
Let's see. Two of the guys are doing a 308. One is doing a 6.5 Creedmoor, and one's doing a 6.5 PRC.
And now what are they, when we say build, I'm assuming they're picking like the stock, they're betting the thing, all that.
Yep, they're doing all that. They ordered, each of them wanted a stock a little different for their, you know, body length. You know, one guy's got long arms, the other guy's get a little bit shorter. You know, you want to have something that's adaptable to fit your cheek and everything else. So they did all that, and they went and put the scopes on, and they've been out testing all their loads and experimenting with different bullets and different loads. And so, yeah, it's kept them pretty busy, and all the stuff that they need, you know, we're able to get through Brownells. So between Howa and Brownells and Nosler and Leupold, we're kind of putting a package together there that hopefully when people see it, it'll interest some of them in doing it. You know, I'm of the age where my eyes are bad enough where I'm like, well, this wouldn't be fair. I shouldn't even show up here. I might show up at the wrong shooting station, bad as my eyes are. So,
do they have, it's not an age class. It's purely rifle class.
Purely rifle class, yeah. And okay. Then NRL has another series that's, you know, for the long range precision guys. And that's, you know, that's a whole different thing. They're shooting out to much farther distances in their precision series versus their hunting series.
Gotcha. I like the timed aspect, put a little bit of stress on the shooters. We have a guy down the road here in Gardnerville. We've had him on the show. He runs a course like that out in Smith Valley, just over the hills there. Okay. But it's similar concept, like, hey, go up this hill, you got to find the target, engage the target, you have X amount of minutes to do it, and then go to the next station, on and on. Both Dave and I shoot 3D archery tournaments pretty regularly, so there's something there that appeals to me.
Yeah.
I just know my financial list and my hobbies list, I'm in the sweet
spot.
They don't
match.
No, they don't.
They don't match.
Yeah, I can relate to that. After I got back from the Yukon last year, my wife said, it's a good thing you've got all your dream hunts done because you're out of money.
Yeah. Going to be a lean winner.
Yeah.
Can we keep going on projects? Because, man, you have been popping up in our feed pretty regularly.
Oh, yeah.
You're doing something with Mountain Tough now, too.
Yeah. You know, I just turned 59. And last year, about this time of year, I really messed up my arm. I ended up falling through a glass shower door and took out a big chunk of my right forearm and a bunch of tendons and muscles and other stuff. And so I wasn't allowed to do my normal hiking and other things I do to prepare over the summer for hunting season. And I went into this hunting season probably in the worst shape that I have in a long time. And I said, you know what? If I want to hunt elk until I'm 80, I'm going to have to start making an investment in my health and in my hunting. So the Mountain Tough guys are just across the highway from me here in Bozeman, and I've known them for years, and I'm like, you know, I'm an accountant. I'm not a gym rat, right?
Yeah.
The last thing an accountant wants to do is go to a gym with a bunch of muscled up guys and, you know, look like Pee Wee Herman or something. So I've never been a gym rat. Well, I got to talking to them, and they're like, no, you misunderstand what we do here. So they have this app where no matter where you are, at home, at work, you know, travel, this is trade show season for me. I'm on the road for about 3 months, and through this app, I get a new workout every day. And I go down to the fitness center, I do it in my hotel room or whatever, and I feel so much better this year than I normally do in March, just because, one, I am eating better, but just the accountability to exercise every day. And I knew that, but I was being lazy. And
yeah.
I finally had to have the wake up call.
Knowing something and doing it are two different things, Randy.
Yeah. Father Time served a reminder every once in a while, and I got my reminder. So I'm trying my best to pay attention to what it takes to live the hunting life that I have in my mind for my future. I just got to invest more in my health. They're helping me do that.
It's tough, though. I mean, trying to get that new routine into your schedule when you're a little older, you're like, well, you kind of him and hot. But once you start getting it going and then you do these workouts, and then you look at that donut or that bag of Doritos or something, you're like, you know what? I just worked my butt off. Maybe I shouldn't have that. So that it's kind of like a stepping stone. You know, you do one thing and it makes you think about the next thing. Yeah. Then over time you create that, that routine just is so beneficial, especially for folks like us that are really outdoorsy and want to continue looking at the top of that mountain going, yeah, I can get up there.
For me, that is, Dave, what's driving it is I don't want to give up doing my mountain hunting at age 59. I want to have a quality to the things I love, and the thing I love the most after my family and other things is being out in the hills with a pack on my back and a tag in my pocket. And I just view this as an investment. And hopefully, you know, if people watch this, they're right now they're filming a course around me. I'm the quote unquote talent, and it's called the 50 plus course that's going to be ready later this summer.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, Randy, you have no idea how many people in their 50s have, you know, an impairment like you have in your arm or your liver. We all start listing off all of our restrictions, and it becomes a pretty good reason not to go and work out or not to commit to being in shape. And like, no, we're going to work through this. So it's going to be an 8-week course. We're about a third the way through filming it. Quick as I get off this call, that's what I'm going to do is be filmed. An accountant being filmed as part of a workout routine.
Is it similar to their body weight stuff?
Mostly body weight. So if I'm on the road, I don't need to bring dumbbells or whatever. If I have a fitness center that has some of that, I can make it a little more intense by adding weight. But pretty much all of it is body weight stuff. It's amazing how much you can push your body by just doing body weight exercise.
Oh, yeah. So it's kind of based on like almost like a calisthenic workout in a sense.
We nicknamed Dave the Davinator. He's one of the fittest human beings I've met for sure.
He and I are on the other end of the spectrum of each other. Because I drive a desk for a living, and I always used to say this elk hunter is powered by ice cream.
Well, you know what? Some ice creams.
I've lived by the theory that, you know, denial is not necessarily the best thing in life. But I don't know that indulgence in excess is a great thing either.
My grandpa used to tell me all the time, and I still live by this, everything in moderation.
That's a
fact. Everything in moderation. So, yeah.
Including ice cream.
Exactly.
You're listening to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk and Nevada Backcountry. What's on Randy Newberg's calendar for 2024?
You know, living in Montana, the reason I left Nevada and moved to Montana was I can get a deer and elk tag every year.
That is nice.
Most people think that my Montana elk tag cost me $20. When I moved here in 1991, I took a $25,000 pay cut between me and my wife. So my resident elk tag cost me about $25,000.
Whoa,
so,
yeah.
I don't look at it that way because my wife would remind me how much I've invested in my hunting problem if she looked at it that way. So, but I always get that over the counter, so that's always on the list. We're waiting to hear on a lot of the other states. You know, we've already applied in Arizona and New Mexico and Colorado and stuff like that. I did luck out and drew another spring bear hunt in Alaska. So
nice.
And then my last dream hunt that I paid for in 2000 that depleted my funds, I've always wanted to hunt the Mackenzie Mountains of the Northwest Territories, and I signed up for that. And then we had the COVID year, and the Canadian border was closed for 2 years, so it kept getting bumped and bumped and bumped. And this is the year I get to do that in August, so that's probably my big highlight hunt. And then you know, I'm sure, you know, I fully intend that I'm going to be in Nevada desert bighorn hunting in you know, later this fall. But
are you looking for desert or California or either one, or you don't really care?
Either one.
Yeah.
I've never drawn a sheep tag in my life. So I'm thinking maybe Nevada's finally going to feel that I'm worthy. I mean, Montana, I got maximum points, and, you know, me and 20,000 other people have maximum points. So I joke when I tell my wife, well, we can't go on vacation then because I'm going to draw a sheep tag this year. And she just rolls her eyes. Like, you've been saying that for 35 years.
That'll happen. Eternal optimism. Yeah,
that's right. It'll happen.
Yeah. So other than that, we're just waiting on the draw results to see what we end up with. you know, usually between over-the-counter tags, some leftover tags, some of our general tags here in Montana, we got more than enough to keep us busy and producing content. And as long as people keep watching and listening, I guess I'll keep running the cameras and doing podcasts.
Let me ask you, Randy, Montana, you went on, what the heck's it called? Matt Ranella's podcast. And I know Matt's, Matt's stance on a lot of things, but, is it as bad as people say when it comes to public land access and overcrowding?
No, it's not. You know, everything is relative. You measure it compared to 20 years ago and it does seem crowded. You know, like I did a hunt last year in Montana on a river with jet boats, and it was one of the most crowded hunts I've ever been on. And, it is what it is. You know, Montana's population has grown almost 50% since I moved here.
Whoa.
And I'm part of the problem, right? You look at your population growth in Nevada.
Oh, yeah.
It's all the Rocky Mountain states have underwent huge population booms. And then we also have declining numbers. I look at when I was in Nevada going to college, you guys had 260-some thousand mule deer. And what do you have now? 70,000 or 80,000?
Roughly about that.
You had more people, smaller herds. And in, you know, Montana, it's 2/3 private. So you start losing access to that private like we have in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And those people get displaced and they end up on the public. So it does feel more crowded, no doubt about that. And, you know, right now with the we had drought in 2019, 20, and 21. And then we had that brutal winter at 22, 23.
Yeah.
Our deer numbers in our deer breadbasket, if you want to call it that, of eastern and central Montana, the numbers are about 50% of the long-term average. So I just tell people when you come here, you know, they charge you a lot for that deer tag. I get that. But just have eyes wide open that our deer numbers are not what they used to be.
Nevada started splitting up some of the bigger units.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
You know, because that was one of the things like, oh man, you're giving out too many tags. There's too many people that are out there hunting. It's not that there's too many people out there hunting. It's that there's too many people that are hunting the same canyons.
Yes.
Because they don't want to go any deeper. They're only going to access the spots that are really easily accessible. They're not ready or willing to go hike over the ridge or over the next two ridges
to get away from people.
Because that kind of has that, it's almost like a smoke and mirrors thing. It looks like there's a lot of people out there, but there's really not because they're all jammed in 2 square miles.
Well, having hunted Nevada a lot, your version of crowded in Nevada compared to the pumpkin patch of Montana, Colorado, you guys, it's like you're out there lonely and all alone when you're hunting Nevada compared to some of the other states where we have over-the-counter hunting. But, you know, that's a trade-off that we have in, you know, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, is residents get over-the-counter hunting, but you got to accept that it's going to be crowded in the easy-to-access spots.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It is what it is. And so would you rather go to an extremely limited entry type situation? Some people would, but right now I'm still happy competing with the masses out on public land and know that I get to hunt elk and deer every year.
There's always a spot where you can get away from other hunters. It's, you know,
if you go far enough or.
Yeah. And that's what I've noticed. Sometimes it's just a matter of just going over one or two little hills and if you feel like you're completely on Mars.
I think it's part of the human condition, right? We always want it to be a little bit favorable to whatever is our own interest, and I'm guilty of that. But we got to look at it from the bigger picture of what is the opportunity that's out there. Are we doing what we can to put more wildlife on the landscape? Because when people complain about crowding or complain about lack of tags or not drawing a tag, I always tell them, if you want to have twice as good at odds of drawing your tag, put twice as many critters out there on the landscape. And what are you doing about that?
Speaking of which, what do you have coming up for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation?
Oh, man, they got me on the road doing all kinds of things. They have their 40th anniversary event in Missoula, Montana first weekend of May. They're celebrating their 40th year and all the accomplishments of, you know, 1.2 million acres of new and improved public access, almost 9 million acres of habitat improved. I mean, wow. If you think about what's been done in 40 years for the cause of elk, it's worthy of a celebration. So they got me doing that. And then you guys were talking about those 3D archery tournaments. Well, the Total Archery Challenge aren't necessarily tournaments. You go shoot these 3D courses. So yeah. Elk Foundation participates in a lot of that. And so they have me kind of hopscotching around the Rockies, going to those events, telling big stories, trying to park people from their money on behalf of the Elk Foundation. When it comes to conservation, I'm completely shameless about trying to park you from your money for the cause of conservation. I get to go do that. And when I go do those things, you know, I get to interact with so many neat people. I get to hear so many cool stories. My wife, she's like, you would sit here and listen to the last person who had a hunting story at 4 a.m. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
100%. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those are fun things to do. I enjoy it. And I know that I'm a beneficiary. I think we're all beneficiaries of the work that some of these conservation groups do. And I ask myself every day, am I doing my share? And hopefully I am. And at my age, 59, I've had every bit of my share of opportunities that I'm very grateful for. And I hope people think about what are they doing or what can they do to improve and keep that opportunity for that next group who's coming behind us. Because somebody did that for us.
Hey, very, very well put, Randy.
Yes, very much so.
I think we'll close out on that, man. I will shoot you a text when I draw the moose tag.
And I'll let you know when I draw my antelope tag.
Yeah. Oh, buddy. Hey, sincere thank you for taking the time, Randy. You got an open invitation anytime you want to hop on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time today.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe next time when I'm down for Wild Chief or one of the events in Nevada, do it face-to-face.
Absolutely love that.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
You owe it to yourself to go check out Huntin' House Archery Center off Longley. The entire crew there is absolutely phenomenal. They know the regs. They know what you need to be successful in the field. Go get set up for success at Huntin' House Archery Center. Tom Gresham coming up next at 11 only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.